I've entitled our little series through Ecclesiastes, What If? And today, you know, I've entitled today's message, How Cheerful. I have retold a joke a few years back that the late Henny Youngman used to tell. It's one of my favorites. Now, bear with me, it's for humor's sake only, not to make a point other than the point you'll get the point. And so I share with you again. There was a man walking down the main street of his town when a long, very long funeral procession began making its way to the cemetery. It was a very odd procession, given that there were two funeral hearses in the procession, followed immediately by a man walking a huge, snarling dog on a leash. Behind him were at least 100 other men, solemnly making their way to the cemetery. The man watching this became quite curious, and he walked up to the man who was walking the dog and requested an explanation to the very odd makeup of this funeral procession. Well, the man replied, "My dog here killed my wife and my mother-in-law." The man was quite startled, but regained his composure after a moment and asked, "Can I borrow the dog?" To which the man replied, "You could see it coming, couldn't you? Get in line." I have long since lost count of the number of times that I've tried to make the point that the reason we like to laugh at funeral jokes or jokes about death is that we believe it will somehow lessen the impact on our own mortality, our own sense of mortality. Our reluctance to face our mortality is one of the reasons that many people refuse to go to funeral visitations or even the funeral service itself. I also think deep down that one of the major reasons traditional funerals are becoming rarer over the years by making them more like a party or a wake, we think we can avoid the messiness of the fact that we're all one day going to die. The preacher in Ecclesiastes makes no bones about our need to confront our own mortality. After all, the death rate for humanity is 100%. And yet, as I pointed out last week with Howard Hughes, many people still die in this world without a will, including, believe it or not, many lawyers, or they die without funeral arrangements. It's a selfish thing to do, and it's reckless, because this places a tremendous burden on the surviving family members. Now, just before we moved to Simcoe, Laura was working at a funeral home, and she got a nice discount on a prepaid funeral, so we took them up on it. And we did this not because we are morbid, but because we recognize that someday our families are going to have to cope with our death. And dealing with the funeral cost of a funeral ahead of time, not to mention the impact of inflation on those costs, provides for the inevitable. Now, honestly, I wasn't sure how our children would react to the news that we had prepaid our funerals, but surprisingly, they were very relieved. Why? Well, it was one less thing for them to worry about down the road. It is a wise thing to prepare for the inevitability, but it's a mark of wisdom to understand that as a follower of Christ, my life is not defined just by what happens or where I go when I die. Our lives with God are eternal, and that includes the here and the now, as well as the afterlife. With our mortality hanging over our heads, a truly wise person commits to living in ways that honor the Lord God and give those who attend our memorial services reasons to celebrate our lives. Now, the first thing we can do is cultivate a good reputation, isn't it? The preacher states that a good reputation is like a nice perfume. We have an expression in English that is very apt for today. we use it when we meet someone for the first time. We say, your reputation precedes you. In other words, the nature of the person's character was known before the person even arrived on the scene. Much like the smell of a perfume gets to us before we actually discover who is the wearer of the perfume. The preacher says, a wise person lives each day mindful of one particular day, the day of our deaths. The average person, statistically, has 27,000 days of life. 27,000 days to learn, to grow, to love, and to serve. Then it's over. Once we die, our opportunities to really affect change in this world are gone. If we recognize the limited amount of time we have, we are more apt to spend our time wisely. It's like a modern GPS system where you punch in your destination and that influences the route you will take to get there. If we know that death is the final destination of our earthly lives, that should influence the journey. So how do you want to be eulogized at the end? How do you want people to remember you? What difference have you made? No wonder Paul wrote in Philippians 1:21, living means living for Christ, and dying is even better. The next piece of advice the preacher gives sounds a bit illogical. Sorrow is better than laughter. Funerals are better than parties or festivals. In our culture, for the most part, we love to celebrate our victories very publicly. Just see what happens every time our favorite sports team wins a series, like last Sunday at the Super Bowl. Everyone loves a parade, the saying goes. However, as a culture, we tend to mourn our losses privately. This trend to private grief is very problematic to us as a people because it leads to depression, substance abuse, and redirected anger and frustration. In the preacher's day, the rhythms of life held a place for public mourning of one's loved ones. The biblical culture recognized that there was a time to grieve. If you read the Psalms through thoroughly, you'll see how many of them are actually songs of lament. Pretending that all is well with us as individuals or as a community does no one any good. That's why the Bell Let's Talk program is so important and does such good work. If we do not learn to handle our sorrow and disappointment in healthy ways, we are fools. Just pay attention to most television shows or particularly dramas and pay attention to the characters in the script who are under some sort of pressure or experienced a loss, and almost inevitably they say something like, I could really use a drink. Or they're portrayed as being drunk to cope with their pain. It's not healthy and it's certainly not helpful. The next piece of advice on how to live a wise life may be tricky to capture at first, but it's very useful. Essentially, the preacher is telling us that both wise people and fools are happy to pass on their advice. If you want to live a good life, you need to close one ear to the fools and keep one ear open to the wise. But it raises a question. How do you know who's the fool and who's not? Well, the preacher gives us kind of a test. He writes that a fool thinks everything's funny. Everything's a joke. There are likely people who try and lighten up things at the most inappropriate times. Anyone familiar with the Simpsons television program will remember that there's a character in there called Dr. Hibbard, and he's always portrayed as laughing at the most inappropriate times. A fool treats serious matters with frivolity. Now, to be honest, a fool can be a lot of fun when times are good. They can be the life of the party, but in difficult times, they are downright annoying. The other thing fools tend to be are like shooting stars. They are at the beginning of a crisis full of passion and energy, and then they fade fast. They are not the people who will walk with you through the long, dark days that we all encounter. A wise person, the preacher states, is also someone who realizes that shortcuts are actually dead ends. Now, a foolish person will try and cut corners up to and including unethical and illegal behavior. When we take a bribe, he says, we reveal that we love money more than we love God. It is very tempting, isn't it? When faced with the pressure of finishing a project to try and get to the end quicker, there are a lot of excuses made as to why people feel it's their right to fudge billing hours, steal from employers, skimp on the quality of materials. I ran across a funny little story about a lawyer who arrived at the pearly gates and was met by St. Peter. The man was informed that he'd have to wait 82 years in purgatory before coming to heaven. The lawyer demanded to know how that number was reached, to which St. Peter replied that the number was the number of hours he had billed his clients. The preacher continues by stating that finishing is better than starting. You know, almost every man is a great husband on the honeymoon. Every woman is a great mother on the day the baby is born. Starting is easy. It's the end that counts. A wise person knows that between the beginning and the end, there will be struggles. But with God's help, we can get through those struggles. Even old King Ahab, that sinful king in the Old Testament, recognized that truth in 1 Kings 20, verse 11. There, he says, a warrior putting on a sword for battle should not boast like a warrior who's already won. Excuse me. I can clearly remember a time when I was riding on the school bus going to school and talking with classmates about the beginning of our new minor church hockey season, and each of us in turn bragging about how great our respective teams were, this despite the fact that we hadn't even played a game yet and really only had a couple of practices. I was particularly boastful on the bus, and this despite the fact that at the end of the season we only won 2 games and we lost many of our games by huge margins. It's how you finish. The preacher goes on to say that a wise person also is slow to anger. Not only that, but I would add that their anger needs to be directed at appropriate things like injustice and protecting the vulnerable. Not like me, who says things I shouldn't when I get cut off in traffic or when someone takes the last cookie. Oh. I really like the advice in verse 10 because, frankly, I'm tired of about hearing people say that they miss the good old days. All of us know people who are stuck in a former time period. Most often it was a time in their lives when they were in their prime, or at least they believed they were. To such individuals, anything that comes afterwards or is different is not as good or valuable and certainly not worth getting to know. However, as we all know, time is not static. You cannot go back. It's like when you're learning to drive a car. One of the first things that the instructors try to get you to do is to look where you are trying to go. Look down the road. To try and drive by watching out the rearview mirror, it's suicide on the 403. There is no way you can move forward in life with the Lord if you're constantly looking back. It's kind of why Lot's wife turned to salt when she looked back at a godless culture. It's why Jesus said that when you put your hand to the plow, you have to look forward. Fools dwell in nostalgia. It is dangerous, divisive, and counterproductive to ever wish things could be the way they once were. Ever since the fall in Genesis chapter 3, the only productive direction in God's plan is moving forward. The preacher then goes on to say something positive about wealth. Well, kind of. His point here is that in the rough seas of life, you need two oars in your boat. You need wealth and you need wisdom. Wisely using wealth can help you take care of many problems in life, he says, but not everything. Wisdom is knowing when to use our wealth to turn our boats with the oar of wealth away from the rocks to try and avoid them. A wise person who understands that God has two hands at work in our lives. God made us with this beautiful world, but because of sin, things have become corrupt and imperfect and crooked. Wisely living in this world recognizes that no one and no thing is truly perfect. There are shadows within us. There are shadows in this world. Imagine, if you will, trying to climb a mountain. Now, logically, you would think that, well, if you want to climb a mountain, you just start at the bottom and you make a beeline to the top. However, true mountain climbers know that's not how it works. When you climb a mountain, you have to navigate some rough spots on the terrain. Sometimes you actually have to climb down a little bit to get a new angle to approach around a big rock or a fissure. A trip up a mountain is one of meandering and switchbacks. It's the only way to avoid falling off the mountain or getting stuck there. In life, there are times when we can move forward, and yes, there are times when we get set back a little bit. The preacher talked about this earlier. There will be times of prosperity, and there will be times of poverty, times of good health, and times of sickness. Sometimes, and I know I have often in my life, we pray that God will give us a straight and even path to follow without having to take any steps back or a detour. The preacher wants us to remember that God has two hands. Sometimes God is very active in our lives. Sometimes he's passive. God does good things for us, and sometimes God allows difficult things to happen to us. But we need to accept both from the hand of God. I've mentioned several times now in this series that that was Job's approach, wasn't it? Should we accept only good things from the hand of God, he said, and never anything bad? This is what faith looks like in the face of pain. We do not see the full picture of what God is doing, but we trust him. These kind of experiences are what leads our faith to become sight. We need to remember always, as the Apostle Paul states, that we see through a distorted mirror, you and I. Our vision is limited, it is skewed, it is self-directed. Finally, the preacher concludes with what should be our approach to life. He commends us to enjoy prosperity while we can, because you never know when it's going to be taken away from us. His point is that anyone and everyone can have things taken away from them at any time. This truth is very unsettling to us. The truth also leads us to make a choice about how to live our lives, and all of us, whether we recognize it or not, has made that choice. The good news is that if we made the wrong choice, we can choose the other path. Knowing that we can lose people or things at any moment, we could allow ourselves to become bitter and despair. When we do lose something or someone, it really hits us hard. We could also choose to never enjoy anything or get close to anyone, because at some point they will be taken away from us. Or we can enjoy what or who we have for as long as we can. When it is gone, we can be thankful to God for what we have. If one wonders just how deep the dissatisfaction runs in the heart of society, Perhaps we'll consider an experiment that was conducted by the Hayden Planetarium in New York City. The planetarium ran an advertisement in New York newspapers inviting those who would like to be among the first people to journey to another planet to submit an application. Within a matter of days, get this, 18,000 people applied. The applications were turned over to a panel of psychologists who examined the applications and came to a very startling conclusion. The vast majority of those who had applied wanted to start a new life on another planet because they were so discouraged by life on this one. Well, I've got news for those participants in that study, and also for you. We're not going anywhere. This planet's all we have. This life is all we have. God has given this life to us and has offered to walk with us no matter what terrain we encounter. You may not have a choice on which road to travel, but you always, my friends, have a choice about who travels with you.